Welcome to F1 Coffee Corner, Full Beans. I'm your host as always, Terry, and I'm here to keep you up to date with all of the unbiased, hard-hitting Formula 1 news. So grab your favourite mug of coffee, sit down, strap in and get yourself comfortable to join in the conversation. Because this is F1 Coffee Corner. This is Full Beans, the must-have podcast for all Formula 1 fans. Welcome to F1 Coffee Corner, Full Beans the podcast. I'm your host as always, Terry. This week, we've got all of the latest from the Formula 1 paddock, plus a look forward to the Chinese Grand Prix, which is, of course, the first time we're going back to China since the COVID pandemic in 2019. So lots to look forward to. It is also the first sprint race weekend of the year. So there is a slight change to the format as what normally happens with sprint weekends. So we're going to be covering that as well also. So with all of that in mind and not a lot of time, let's sit down, strap in, give us some full beans, grab your coffee. Let's go. So Formula One news. Couple of stories really to talk about. The biggest one being obviously Fernando Alonso signing a new contract with Aston Martin. Now, this is a multi-year contract. It's through until the end of at least 2026. So it takes us into the new regulations. Fernando himself has talked about how it's the biggest contract he's ever signed in terms of length, suggesting there's a much wider role for Fernando and Aston Martin beyond the driving career of Fernando Alonso, which just seems to be going from strength to strength and seems to be going on and on. So let's be honest about it. But it certainly feels that Fernando and Aston Martin have got a long-term agreement in place. In terms of Fernando himself, his only realistic option with Aston Martin would have been Mercedes as an outside bet. And obviously retirement. I didn't think that Red Bull was ever on the table, despite some media outlets kind of pushing that narrative. I didn't feel it was ever a serious consideration for whatever reason. I think Mercedes was an option that Toto had explored. He's got a good relationship with Flavio Briatore. Obviously, the experience and the signing of Fernando would have been a good boost with Lewis going in terms of exposure and Mercedes and bringing in a world champion. But I think ultimately he wants George to be the number one driver, so he's going a different way about it. Where does that leave Mercedes? I think personally it's a straight choice now. We're looking at between two drivers, which is Toto signing Carlos Sainz from obviously Ferrari with him being out of contract, or the promotion of Kimi Antonello, who's currently about to be testing the W12 in Austria this week. Two reasons for this. I think Carlos will do a really good job for Mercedes in terms of the here and now. But I also think that Toto is quite keen to make sure that he doesn't lose out on Kimi like he lost out on Max. And I feel that he might be seeing the performance of the W15 currently and the team is a good opportunity to maybe bed Kimi in a team that isn't performing at the top of its game. And by that, I mean, there's going to be a lower expectation on him. So it'd be interesting to see on that front what's going on. And yeah, let's dive into Fernando Alonso, because it was a bit of a shock in terms of a two-year deal. It came out of nowhere in terms of when we were expecting it to be announced. There was no kind of warning. He gave us that Seb-style scare where he came and sat in the chair. Really clever marketing from Aston Martin, as always. Clearly on top of the social media. Clearly on top of, what the fans want to see. And in terms of what it means for Aston Martin, I still think that Honda, by being exclusive to Aston Martin, have made a sort of deal with Aston Martin that they're going to have a choice of one of the seats. So with Fernando tied in, you kind of feel that maybe now we might be seeing the beginning of the end of Lance Stroll and Aston Martin in 2026. I think we're going to get another couple of years. I do think that we've got this season, next season, and then 2026, Honda influence will kick in. I do believe that puts someone like Yuki in a prime position. And, maybe it looks like we're going to be having Fernando Alonso and Yuki Tsunoda for 2026 for Aston Martin, with Lance Stroll moving aside because of that. That's based on just what I've seen in the past with Honda deals and what's going on, not based on anything that we're hearing from Aston Martin. Yeah, they've actually been quite complimentary about Lance Stroll this week. But we do know he's got this role in contracts. We do know there's a lot of pressure. And at what point will they make that change? And at what cost did the Honda deal come to Aston Martin? So really intrigued to see how that one plays out. With regards to Fernando himself, it's his last big chance, isn't it? He feels that Honda's in a good position to give an engine. He's clearly got over the bad blood that was in that relationship from when he was at McLaren. There was a bit of talk that might have been his stumbling block to this contract signing. you know, Honda have quite clearly gone, no, we're fine with it. I imagine it's taken a few discussions. You know, Fernando wasn't very complimentary of Honda when he was at McLaren, and he made a couple of remarks that I'm sure there are a lot of people at Honda who still remember and weren't quite happy with. So I imagine it did take a bit of ironing out. But even so, Fernando Alonso once again tying himself in. Aston Martin 2026, deal done. Like I said, last big moves now are obviously Red Bull with their second seat, which is looking more and more likely. With Carlos, I don't think a sort of an option for Red Bull. I don't think him and Mats gets on. I don't think that that's something which is going to happen. So I can see Checo getting that one, especially given the current performance of Daniel in that Visa Cash App RB. So I think Checo to Red Bull, even if it's only a one-year extension to take them into 2026, will be signed. Middle of the European legs, I think we'll get that one, providing Checo's performances don't dip off. And that leaves Carlos really, like I say, with a move to Mercedes, or he's looking at Sauber Williams, believe it or not, which is just frightening, really. Other news, Andretti, got to talk about Andretti. So Andretti, as we know, haven't got a seat in Formula 1 until 2028 at the very earliest. And even then, it's not a guaranteed seat at all, depending on what happens in the Concorde Agreement, which we're going to come on to just after this bit here. But yeah, so Andretti, full steam ahead, opened their Silverstone facility, 45,000 square feet on Silverstone Park, which is just behind the Aston Martin headquarters, right by the track there. Now, this is going to be a hub for all of their European racing as well. So they're going to move their Formula E to there. They're going to move lots of other bits that they do into there. They're looking at entering Formula 2, Formula 3, and I believe Formula 4 as well. That's obviously to get on side with Formula 1 management. We know their relationship with the FIA is good. Also, they want to increase the chances of American drivers coming up through the ranks, and they feel the best way is to have a team for that. They're here for the long term. Love Andretti's positivity on this. Love the fact they're not taking no for an answer, even though Formula One management has said, you're not coming in. Love the fact they're just pushing ahead. Now, with regards to what it looks like for them, they're building a car for 2026, which is quite an interesting conversation. So their project in Silverstone already has recruitment underway. They've got staff from Formula One teams coming on board already. They've got the 2026 regulations. They're full steam ahead. Now, I suppose one of the concerns I've never really looked at before with the Formula One teams is, are they worried about Andretti joining? One, we know prize money is the big stumbling block. Don't get me wrong. We know that's number one. But is number two this outside of the cost cap development that they're currently doing? Now, we know that Audi are locked into Sauber. So Audi have to abide by Sauber's rules and their regulations because they're buying an existing team. Now, Andretti technically aren't part of the Formula One calendar. They're not part of Formula One because they've got an entry approved, but they haven't got a contract with Formula One management to enter the grid. So therefore, I don't know the rules on the cost cap, if I'm honest, which is really annoying for someone who prides themselves on knowing the rules. I would imagine they would have to show a willingness to be working within the cost cap because that's what would be expected. But then I don't know how you would impose cost cap sanctions on a team not in Formula One. And I don't think you can, if I'm being honest, because surely Andretti would then be able to say, well, you can't impose sanctions on us because we're not part of the Concorde Agreement or part of Formula One. We're just kind of building a car as a hobby, I suppose is the best way to describe it. Which, does that mean that Andretti might actually have found the ultimate loophole in terms of development here? They might be finding a loophole where it allows them to build a car outside the cost cap. And if they do come in 2026, are they going to be a team to be reckoned with? Yeah, based on their experience in motorsport anyway, but also because of this loophole that has suddenly reared its head, which I hadn't even thought of until someone made a comment on one of my videos. So yeah, great spot on the person who commented about cost cap regulations, because I know it applies to teams. I know it applies to teams taking over, such as Audi. What I don't know is, does it apply to teams who are waiting to come to Formula One? Like I say, you'd have to show some willingness, but surely that would be in the year before sort of thing. So, yeah, interesting one. Like I say, they've got people coming on board. They're quite keen to push ahead anyway. They're quite keen to have their car ready to go for 2026. They talked about General Motors are already starting engine development, even though they're not an approved supplier. And yeah, like I say, kudos to Andretti for just going full steam ahead. And yeah, from a personal point of view, really hope they get on the grid as an 11th team, because we're going to talk about takeovers in just a second and Concord Agreement. But yeah, seriously, if you haven't seen already, check out the post on that. Facility looks amazing. Expansion to grow looks really good. Can't wait to see what Andretti do, especially if they're going to enter Formula 2, Formula 3, and potentially Formula 4 as well. So it'd be great to see Andretti becoming a force within Formula 1 and the sport of races, as well as what we already are for Formula E and obviously other motorsports as well. So let's hopefully get this Formula 1 management and FIA approval out of the way. So next bit I want to talk about was the Concord Agreement, because this does affect Andretti in terms of what's going on. Now, the Concord Agreement has been pretty quiet recently, quite surprisingly, because it runs out at the end of next year, at the end of 2025. There is a lot of talk from people within Formula 1 saying that they're viewing this one very much as an extension to the current agreement, so they're not overly worried about it. They think that the current negotiations are going to be quite simple, quite fast, quite straightforward. Two caveats, though, to this. There is two things which are proving a bit of a thorn when it comes to the Concord Agreement. Number one is new cars, in terms of new teams, I should say, rather than new cars. But new cars, new teams, you get me drift, new teams. So the Formula One teams are very keen to put in a 10-team limit into the Concord Agreement. Now, this is fairly obvious. They're going to try something like this. We know there's talk of the buy-in, which is currently set at $200 million, being raised for about $800 million, because the Formula One teams feel that's far too low in terms of compensation. So we know this raise is going to happen anyway. Now, the teams want to take that one step further. They want to limit it to 10 teams. Now, the Formula One teams are selfish in that sense. They are out to get the most money they can. And unless there's an increase to the prize pot, which doesn't look likely at the moment, they're not going to agree to 11, 12 teams, because they don't want it split. Yeah, they're looking after their bottom line profit, and you can't really blame them for that. Now, in terms of Formula One management, they're happy to support this because they feel that, you know, keeping the teams on board and this smooth, you know, Concord Agreement negotiation is what they want. For them, it doesn't make any difference. They're not going to gain extra from having Andretti in the sport. They don't feel that adding Andretti to the sport is going to give them enough of a shot in the arm to make a lot of money off taking Andretti in. That's Formula One management's big issue with this. They're not seeing it as it's going to increase this viewership in America or across the world. So therefore, all it's going to do is cause problems for them. And that's one of their reasons why they're so hesitant to do it, because they don't want to annoy the teams and piss them off. And likewise, they don't see it as a big enough boon to warrant sort of going in with the FIA and siding with it. So that's where you got this loggerhead on it. So the FIA are keen to support this to keep the teams happy. Formula One management are keen to support this to keep the teams happy. The FIA, on the other hand, they're not keen for this. They want to keep it at 12 teams, which is what they're currently allowed to bring to the grid. They want to add the option to add teams in. They want a clear sort of structure into what a new team entering Formula One looks like in terms of Formula One management accepting them, because we know that Andretti proved to the FIA that they could join the Formula One grid. But then when it comes to Formula One management, they went no, because they didn't feel they're going to add enough value. So what the FIA are looking for is they want this clear, what is the buy-in, expected to be about $800 million. And then also, what is the criteria for a new team coming to Formula One that Formula One management would then accept them in? Because at the moment, it's not set out anywhere in paper. It's not clear what that looks like. And they kind of feel that, yeah, the FIA feel that Formula One management are just doing it to just side with the teams and, you know, keep the peace. So that's what they're looking for. So like I say, the teams and Formula One management are keen to push that one through. The FIA are not keen at all. So it's going to be interesting to see how that one goes. Now, the next part of the Concord Agreement, which is a bit more of a sensitive issue, is joint ownership. Now, this is obviously aimed at one company, which is, of course, Red Bull, who own Visa Cash App RB, as well as Red Bull. Now, this is something that Zak Brown has been pushing for quite a while. Certainly, he's been vocal before this season started. What he's saying is, if you look at other sports around the world, you don't have joint ownership in that same league. So if you take football for a prime example, you don't have a company that owns two Premier League football teams, or even two teams in Europe that compete against each other. So Zak Brown is saying that same rule should be applied to Formula One. Therefore, that would mean the sale of one of these teams. Now, logic says that would be Visa Cash App RB because obviously Red Bull have got Red Bull Powertrains and the full partnership. So if there was a split of the assets, it would be Visa Cash App RB that went a separate way. In terms of what that means someone like Andretti could then buy into Formula One. So that's a route they could potentially take. We know that Alpine is another route that Andretti is sizing up. There's also the always talk of someone like Williams, who could they be sold to someone like Andretti as well. Now, if you're Andretti, you're keeping a keen eye on this because if this 10-team agreement goes in, your only way into Formula One is to buy a team. So it feels like Andretti know this. It feels like they're very clued up on what's going on in terms of negotiations, and they're putting themselves in a position with this opening in Silverstone that they're in a really good place to pounce if one of these regulations come into place. So if the Concorde agreement happened to go through and Red Bull had to sell one of their teams, most likely it would be Andretti who picks one of those teams up, wouldn't it? So I feel that Andretti are playing their cards at the moment really well. They're getting everything ready. They're getting their ducks lined up, as the phrase goes, ready for a bid to enter Formula One in whatever way that looks like. I think Andretti just wants to come into Formula One now. I think that he's willing to do that whatever way that looks like, whether it be for an existing team or building up a team from scratch. I think he wants to ultimately build a team up. I don't think he wants to take over a team, but I think at this point now, he's more than willing to take an offer, providing that offer is right and financially doable. So that's the big news coming out from the Concorde agreement. I don't think it's going to have that much traction because obviously Red Bull and Visa Cash App are going to be against it. I'm not sure whether or not the teams will go with it. There hasn't been a lot of talk about this. It feels like McLaren and Zak Brown in particular are the only ones who's got a big beef about Visa Cash App and Red Bull. The performance of Visa Cash App makes you think that they're not sharing parts, that they, it looks like it's the same partnership, which is what it is with Haas and Ferrari, with Aston Martin and Mercedes, with Williams and Mercedes. So it kind of feels like, you know, McLaren are beating a one-man band on this one, but it remains to be seen. We wait to see as such, don't we? But yeah, that's the big news coming from the Formula One paddock. The other big one is Mercedes became the first Formula One team to have a turnover of over 500 million, gave them a profit of 83 million, which is down from 87 million previously. Big money in Formula One. That gives you an idea because we haven't seen Red Bulls yet. You'd imagine Red Bulls is very similar. It normally is. So yeah, it goes to show you how much money these Formula One teams are now making and why they don't want to dilute that with Andretti coming on board. You know, 500 million is a huge amount of turnover. 83 million pounds profit is a lot of money. That's profit that they've made at the end of it. So that's after the cost cap, that's after everything's paid out. 83 million. Yes, it's down, probably related to performance prize money and some sponsorship deals that have ended. Be interesting to see what that figure starts looking like with the move of Lewis to Ferrari, to be honest. A lot of talk of some commercial deals coming to an end. Be interesting to see if those new commercial deals coming on board are as, you know, sort of financially beneficial to Mercedes as what they were when Lewis was there. We know that Toto's talked in the past before now about actually, you know, it's one of those where Lewis has brought a lot to Mercedes in terms of commercial. Toto talked about, you know, billion-dollar deals, billion-dollar value on the back of having Lewis Hamilton as a driver. So it's going to be really interesting to see if these new deals. We know that Puma are making way for Adidas. So we know that that's a move they're going to make. We think that Tommy Hilfiger is staying on board as a partner, but we're not sure for how long. So, yeah, be interested to see what that new deal is worth. We know that Adidas did sponsor the German national football team. They're now not, so that's probably why they've got, you know, their money spare to go for the next big project, which is Mercedes. It obviously aligns with the German market as well. But yeah, I wanna see what that sort of second year after Lewis has left looks like for Mercedes, with a lack of driver performance in terms of where they are in the World Championship, and also probably it's fair to say a lack of marketability in terms of having Lewis Hamilton there. Because if you've got a partnership of George and Carlos, or even George and Kimi Antonelli, it's a lot less marketable as Lewis Hamilton and George Russell, isn't it? So really keen to see how that one goes. And also from a business point of view, of how many people are Lewis fans who will go and support Lewis at Ferrari, and how many are Mercedes fans? That's going to be another real shift in dynamics that I'm keen to see how this one plays out. Because at the moment, when you talk to people, there's a lot of people who are in that camp where they say, actually, I'm a Lewis fan, so I'm going to go that way. Or, yeah, there's some who were saying, actually, I'm a Mercedes fan, and you know what? Thanks, Lewis, but I'm still going to support Mercedes. So really keen to see how that one plays out. Really keen to see what that one looks like in the next sort of, you know, 12, 24 months, how the shift in dynamics in the Formula One world works. Will we be seeing all red at Silverstone next year, or will it still be Mercedes colours for George, or even Papaya for obviously Lando? Interesting to see where these fans go and what they do. Really fascinating times, really, for Formula One, something which we haven't really looked at. And that's pretty much it for the news. The rest of the news isn't really that exciting in terms of what's going on. It's normal sort of everyday news. Upgrades we'll come on to for China in a minute when we do that section. So yeah, let's get into China, shall we? Because we haven't been there for a while. China, first time we've been there since 2019. Obviously, we haven't been there in the modern Formula One cars. We haven't been there in terms of 18-inch tyres and what that looks like. What does the track look like? 5.451 kilometres, 56 laps. First Grand Prix was in 2004, so technically we're celebrating 20 years. Although I don't think they're celebrating it because we haven't been there for the past few, obviously due to COVID restrictions. China was the most hit, as we know, and in terms of quarantine, they were the most hit, so Formula One hasn't made it back there. Lap record is actually, let me just check, Michael Schumacher in 2004 with a lap of 1:32.238. Two DRS zones, tyres, Pirelli brought with them the C2, the C3, and the C4 compound tyres. Now, in terms of the track itself, this is where it's going to get very interesting. So the track itself hasn't been raced on for a number of years. It's going to be a green track. It's on marshland, it's on wasteland, industrial area. It's been resurfaced in places. So they've done some resurfacing work using a new method, which is like a 3D mapping, where it basically maps all of the bumps, grinds them down, resurfaces it. So we don't know if the whole track's been done that way or whether or not there's just areas that have been done. We know that turn one has had a complete resurface, and I believe turn eight, which was another bumpy area, has had a complete resurface. So that's going to affect the tyre degradation. Like I say, lack of running is going to affect it. The weather, we've got rain coming in Friday, sort of Saturday, showers. Now, if you go back to Turkey in 2020, when it rained and all those oars come to the top and they made it like an ice skating rink, we've got that potential as well. Lots of unknowns. And of course, we are into a sprint weekend. Now, what does the sprint format look like for 2024? Because there has been some changes. So what we've now got is on Friday, we've got free practice one. This will then be followed by sprint qualifying. Now, sprint qualifying on Friday will be the start of Parc Fermé. And then on Saturday, we will have the sprint race in the morning. Now, once that sprint race has concluded, Parc Fermé will be lifted because according to the technical regulations, that event has technically finished. Then we have qualifying for the race on Saturday afternoon when Parc Fermé reopens again. So a second bite of the cherry into the Grand Prix itself on Sunday. What does this mean? This means that teams can now use the data from free practice one, from sprint qualifying and the sprint race to make changes to the car before qualifying. Now, this is something that the teams pushed for on the back of what happened in Austin last year, where Lewis and Charles both got disqualified. They realised they had a problem with the setup. They knew that to change that setup, they'd have to go to the back of the grid, and therefore they just took a gamble. Didn't pay off, they got disqualified. But the teams were annoyed because they didn't have the option to change that setup, where they would have just raised that ride height just that little bit more and tweak it. The disadvantage to this system, it could make the sprint race itself more like an extra FP session. And also, you can't run the car on track. So I said in the podcast I filmed with Fantasy Formula earlier this week that when you think about it, teams like Mercedes, they are known to make changes overnight and they bring it to the track and the car handles completely differently. You won't have that option to try it. So it is a bit of a gamble for some teams to change that setup. So we might just see more tweaks rather than a radical setup change. Or if you're a team who's got no chance of scoring points in the sprint, it may well just be a ceremonial sprint race. And of course, the other disadvantage to this is when you look at the gap between the sprint race and qualifying, it's so limited. Our team's going to be really pushing for it, knowing that any big accidents, any big crash is going to put you out of qualifying for the main Grand Prix, with it being such a tight turnaround in terms of the actual allotted time you've got between the sprint race and qualifying to get your cars ready. So not even a parts issue, which we all know is an issue for some teams. We're talking about a pure time point of view. You might not be able to do enough to actually get it through. And yeah, you may not have enough time to fix your car and get it back on track, which it's going to be a nightmare, let's be honest about it, for some of the teams. And I do feel it's going to have a big impact on it. I see why Formula One have done it. It makes more logical run in chronological order in terms of rather than qualifying for a race on Sunday on Friday. But I kind of feel it might detract away from the sprint weekend. Really interesting bit of news from Eddie Jordan this week when he was talking about sprint races. So he talked about making them like a standalone event. So what he said was, you got six races, why not have it four? And why not have it limited? So you need to have driven in less than 10 Grand Prix to drive in a sprint race. Really good idea to get some experience up for people like Ollie Bearman, Felipe Drugovic, get them in a Formula One car, get them driving competitively, so not just in a testing environment, see what they can do. It might help them in terms of teams going to them for getting a drive as well, and bring up the rookies coming through. So I really quite like that idea from Eddie Jordan. I think it's got a bit of potential. I think Formula One management and the FIA should look at make it standalone and make it almost like for the rookies would be a really cool move to see. But in terms of what we got, like I say, we got the C2, the C3, the C4 compound tyres. Pirelli are treating it like a new track. They said that's the only way they can treat it. In terms of the car itself, front left is going to take a battering, always does in China. McLaren is saying it's going to be an issue for all them in terms of, you know, the low speed corners. The pecking order, I feel, will be Red Bull. Max is going to be the driver to beat. And we've got Checo, I think, might welcome Goodyear. He tends to kind of come alive in sprints sometimes. Checo does. So I'm really keen to see what Checo can deliver here. I think Ferrari, with the moves they made in terms of their tyre degradation, are going to be really strong here. I feel they're going to be the closest team to Red Bull. And then I think we're going to get a bit of a mixture. I think Aston Martin straight line speed in Japan, they had won the fastest straight line speed with that DRS open. Clearly, the team have made some tweaks to DRS this season. So I feel they're going to be a team to be reckoned with going around this track with two long straights, two DRS zones, of course, here in China. And then I think we're going to see McLaren, and then Mercedes is going to be the pecking order for the top sort of five, which we know is a breakaway group now from the rest of the five. Now, in terms of the other five, Haas are bringing upgrades to just Kevin Magnussen's car. So what they're doing is make sure they've got enough spare parts rather than bringing two and risking an issue if they have a crash. They're saying, right, Kevin's having them for this race, and then they will have enough developed for Miami to give it to Nico Hülkenberg as well. So they're doing it in two separate hits. So Kevin's got it for this weekend. Nico and Kevin will have it for Miami. So they're not taking it off Kevin. They will have him ready for that one there. We know that Alpine have rushed a new floor. God, they need it. Let's be honest about it. They've got a new floor arriving for China. I don't know if it's one car or two cars yet. They've not clarified that. And we also know that there's a chassis change for Visa Cash App RB and Daniel Ricciardo. This is a scheduled change. It's not something that they feel is a performance thing at all. It's something that was planned in anyway. So they've decided to do it for Daniel's car because he's been saying that he feels there's something not quite right with the car. Obviously, had the crash in Japan, makes sense to do it on that car as well. I also believe there's a new floor coming either Miami or Imola for a Visa Cash App RB as well, but I'm not 100% sure on that one. So that's what we got in terms of upgrades and running order. Like I say, Andrea Stella has talked about how he feels McLaren going to struggle with some of these low-speed corners that they got. That's why I feel like Aston Martin, and in particular Fernando, is going to have to jump on him. Haas, I feel, is going to be the best of the rest. I think Visa Cash App RB is going to kick in. Then I think you've got Williams, Sauber, and of course Alpine. We've not got any official news on Sauber's pit stops yet. Obviously Joe in his first home Grand Prix, it'd be great to see the atmosphere there. Lots of merchandise going on with Joe in China. Lots of sort of Formula One fans here doing a special Joe League for this week as well, which is great to see. So if you get a chance, head on over to Formula One Fantasy and check that one out. You can enter league and you can win some great prizes where you go up against Joe for this week only. Probably going to have to use a chip if you want to do on that one. If you haven't followed Fantasy Formula by now, where have you been? That's the latest thing this year. And yeah, I think China's going to have, it's got the potential, hasn't it, to just throw everything up there. The teams haven't got data. We've got one pre-practice. We haven't been there for so long. A lot of drivers haven't driven there or have driven there, you know, years ago. I think, you know, Fernando was 2018 was the last time he drove there, because the last time we were there, he had retired for the first time. So yeah, really intrigued to see where this one goes. Sprint race will always be good. Sprint race back to back. Obviously, we go from here to Miami. And then obviously the big furious upgrades after that, which will be Imola. So a lot of teams, it looks like they're bringing these upgrades forward to check their CFD and wind tunnel data. We know that Mercedes, yeah, we don't need to harp on about that when we've gone on this podcast enough about that. But we know Mercedes have had problems with the correlation. So it seems like a few of the Formula One teams are rushing some upgrades through. Teams like Alpine need the help, so they're rushing it through for lap bases. But also, this first big upgrade package that's coming in Imola, what the teams want to do, they want to make sure that what they're seeing in the wind tunnel is coming on track before they deliver that upgrade in Imola, before they make that final tweak to what that package is going to look like. First European legs, we'll see a massive upgrade for virtually all of the teams. So don't be surprised when we get to Imola that the update list is going to be humongous when we get there. But yeah, I think that's pretty much all I've got in terms of preview for China and Formula One news. In terms of takeaway, what have we got for the takeaway this week? So, takeaway this week, shameless plug to the Fantasy Formula podcast that I obviously do with Adam and Rob before each race. We normally do the live show. That will be back this Friday, 5 p.m. UK time, over on FanLamp YouTube. If you do get the opportunity, come join us. Ask your questions in there. I'll be there delivering the tech news. Adam and Rob will be there delivering all of the latest from the world of Fantasy Formula One. And with a sprint weekend, there's lots to play for. Lots of people can afford the Max Red Bull Ferrari sort of package going forward. Lots of calls to be made, whether or not we use no negative because of the unknown. So yeah, if you're a Fantasy Formula One player, be sure to check that one out. Now, in terms of Fantasy Formula podcast, I jumped onto the preview show this week on Monday, and we filmed with the amazing Laura Winter from Formula One TV. It was an absolutely amazing episode. You know, she talked about what the role of being a Formula One presenter looked like, women in motorsports, her journey into Formula One, all of the other events that she does outside of Formula One, yeah, sort of rugby, extreme E. She talked about what it's like to be a female in Formula One in terms of social media and what that looks like. And of course, she talked about her fantasy Formula One team, which is currently top of the Formula One TV presenters, the Formula One presenters. So if you get a chance, head on over to FanLamp, check that episode out. Absolutely, you know, delighted that Laura gave up her time to come on the podcast. She was an amazing guest. It was really great to get on there. I missed the one that they had with Chris McCarthy beforehand. So I was absolutely delighted to get onto this one and ask Laura some questions to be part of it. So yeah, a huge thank you to Laura for coming on, and a huge thank you to FanAmp for giving myself, Rob and Adam the opportunity to bring Fantasy Formula to everyone, and also to get some amazing guests on, because they work tirelessly behind the scenes to make sure that the FanAmp podcast goes out and the FanAmp news comes out. So absolutely plugging them. If you haven't already, head on over to their YouTube and social channels, and also download the app, because if you want the latest from Formula One news, FanAmp's got it all. This week in China, they've got people who are there at the Grand Prix. You'll get all the latest on there, including some amazing creators who've got bases on there, who have come together to deliver on there. So if you do get a chance, download FanAmp, sign up, and check out for yourself, especially live chats when the race is going on. It's really interesting stuff. And like I say, I'm back in terms of a podcast with Adam and Rob for Fantasy Formula on FanAmp on their YouTube channel. That will be live 5 p.m. UK time on Friday. So check me out there. If you haven't already, hit subscribe to this channel as well. You'll be notified when all of the latest episode drops. And if you're not already on social media, please give me a follow. F1 Coffee Corner all over the place. And a podcast I did, I was delighted to be on the Dirty Side of the Track podcast last week, where we talked about the origins of F1 Coffee Corner. We talked about Formula One in terms of my journey into it and how I became a creator. We also talked about some DRS questions, which is where they ask you loads of quickfire questions. Really interesting. Go and find out from Dirty Side of the Track what sport outside of Formula One takes my fancy and that I follow. And also we did a quiz on there, which is a bit like Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. So if you want to see if I managed to beat Adam's score 10, head on over and give that one a check. I think the midfield pod has got a episode with Adam coming out this week, so if you get a chance, head on over to them as well to give that one a check out. There are some amazing creators out there doing some great content at the moment. So what I will say is have a look around, check out some of these amazing podcasts and some amazing videos and amazing creators who are delivering some absolutely brilliant, you know, products at the moment. A lot of people doing lots of different motorsports as well. So I've seen lots of creators going to the MotoGP in Kota last week. I know FanAmp have got people doing IndyCar at Long Beach this weekend as well. So yeah, seriously, give these guys a follow. Check out their stuff. They're also doing some amazing work with other sports as well. So really pleased to see that, and really pleased to see that, you know, these amazing creators getting some opportunities as well. So we've got some great people out there doing some amazing content. So I just urge you to go check everybody out, because I feel at the moment there's a real nucleus of good quality content creators out there bringing you latest from not just Formula One now, but also from some other motorsports as well, which if you're not quite into, just give it a check out, give it a try, because you might just be surprised on it. And with that, I bid you farewell. Back to the coffee, back to the grindstone. On a personal note, I just want to say a huge thank you to everyone who messaged about Giovanna being in the hospital. People who know me know I don't like to talk about our personal circumstances much, especially, you know, live on air and things like that. But we were genuinely touched by everybody's message while she was in the hospital for the past couple of weeks. She's doing really well. She's managed to book back up. She's back to her cheeky Giovanna self. It was a worrying time, but I really appreciate all the messages we had, all of the support that was shown to us, all the love that was brought to us. You know, Joe and I generally, you know, thank you all from the bottom of our hearts. It means a lot to know that this Formula One community goes outside just delivering content, and we've met some amazing people through doing this Formula One content who are genuine friends. And if I haven't met up with a lot of people, which I haven't, I can't wait to meet up with you all in person. If you ever see me out and about or an event, please come say hi. Would always happily stop and chat about Formula One and the other things on there. And yeah, just generally, thank you from me, from bottom of my heart. Thank you from Joe as well and the kids. Yeah, it means the world to us to know that people are so concerned by it. So yeah, appreciate you all. And like I said, yeah, I will see you all. Let's hope China delivers a bit of excitement back into the world of Formula One. There's been a lot of talk about it being stale and a lot of talk about it being boring, but for me, you know, your glass is either half full or it's half empty. You can choose to see negative or the positive. Positive are, we're back in China. It's the first time since COVID. That in itself is worth celebrating, because, yeah, it means finally we're going back to somewhere which was hit really hard by what happened in the pandemic. So there's a bit of emotions as well, if I'm honest, from lockdown and stuff. So glad to be back to China. Can't wait to see what a sprint format looks like with the new format. And I can't wait to see just what happens when they hit the track in Shanghai. Catch you all soon. Thanks for listening.